Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Money Smarts for You. Enhance your lifestyle by taking the positive path towards managing your money.
Welcome. I'm Barbie O'Connor, your host for the Money Smarts for You show. After years of working with clients, helping them save, preserve, and grow their assets, I wrote the book Money Smarts for You, The Basics. I wanted teens, millennials, growing families, and others to have a chance to learn the essentials that everyone needs to know about money in their adult lives. This show is your chance to ask me about the financial topics that affect your everyday life. If you have questions or thoughts about what you'd like to hear about on future shows, feel free to email me at barbie@moneysmartsforyou.com. Our theme in April is understanding investments. Over the last 2 weeks, I've explained different kinds of investments and how they fit into your investment objectives. This week, since today is April 15th, Income Tax Day, I will review the basics that you need to know about taxes and your investments. In the remaining weeks of this month, I'll go over in detail about investment strategies, disciplines, and concepts. I hope you will join me each Wednesday in April for the Money Smarts for You show and invite your friends to do so too. By now, you may be participating in an employee stock purchase plan as well as a retirement plan like a 401k or 403b, something like that. If you've been listening to the podcast for the last few weeks, hopefully you feel better and have a better understanding about what you're doing with your money and find all these investment terms much less confusing than before. If you followed my recommendations found in my book, Money Smarts for You, The Basics, available on Amazon, by now you have a spending plan that you can afford. You've saved your initial nest egg of $1,000, and you've started to accumulate cash equal to 6 to 9 months of expenses for your emergency fund. Your nest egg and your emergency fund should be invested in government-insured short-term savings accounts or government-insured money market funds. These April podcasts are designed to help you feel more informed and make better decisions about your future choices of how you invest your money. Please know I am not an accountant, a tax advisor, or a tax attorney. The information I am presenting to you has come from the IRS website, and I will do my best to explain it to you so it is understandable. As I mentioned in my January podcast about working with an accountant, I firmly believe that any person who intends to become an entrepreneur, a business owner, or who already is an owner in a partnership, corporate structure, or the beneficiary of a trust, needs to have a relationship with an accountant, preferably a CPA, a certified public accountant, to work with over the years to help with tax and estate planning. A lot of money can be made by knowing and utilizing the features of the tax laws. So, if you don't have one to work with, ask around to friends, family, the local society of CPAs, and find someone you feel comfortable with who has a good reputation. Well, I've already paid my taxes for this year, so I feel pretty good about that. It's always a daunting task when you find out how much you get to pay to the federal government for the pleasure of living in this country, but I don't know anywhere else I'd like to live. So let's start off with number one, which is if you're paying taxes, you're making money. Every year in April, as the 15th approaches, I hear client investors complain about their tax bill, how it was higher than last year, how they had more taxes to pay, how they wondered if there was any way to avoid paying taxes altogether. My answer to them is, if you are paying taxes, then that means you are making money, somewhere, somehow. The only way to avoid paying taxes is to not make any money. That is the basis for many investments labeled tax-sheltered investments. These investments are designed to lose money for their investors for every 4 out of 5 years, allowing additional deductions against income produced by the investment or deductions against other sources of income. Many tax shelters later turn out to be faulty, creating audits and tax problems for their investors. If you want deductions from your taxes, stick with legitimate investments and make charitable gifts, and you'll be better off in the long run. This problem about complaining about taxes usually has to do with having to find the money to pay the taxes. The IRS is not into a barter economy, so, or a free economy for that matter, so they want cold, hard cash. If your only sources of income are from a job where you have funds withheld each pay period, then chances are this is not an issue for you. However, if a large portion of your income comes from stocks, bonds, partnerships, and other investments, it is possible that you may need to make estimated tax payments or set up a tax account to accumulate money over the year in order to have the funds available to pay your taxes. 2. Dividends and income. Ordinary dividends are usually distributions of income from stocks or mutual funds. These are distributions of your portion of the profits from the companies that you own. Dividends are declared on the declaration date. The date after the declaration date is known as the X date. That is the day after which you will not be entitled to the dividend if you purchase the stock, hence the name X dividend date. Okay, dividends are usually declared once a quarter or approximately every 91 days, which means that the X date follows also only once a quarter. Stock prices sometimes drop around the X date to reflect the fact that the dividend for that quarter is no longer included in the trading value. Why do you care about these tiny details? Because of money and taxes. If your ordinary dividends can be classified as qualified dividends, then you will be eligible to pay a maximum of 20% on that income, as opposed to a potential maximum rate of 39.6%. So you want to know what makes an ordinary dividend a qualified dividend, don't you? First of all, the dividends must be paid by a U.S. corporation or a qualified foreign corporation. Qualified foreign corporations are usually corporations that reside or have their home base in a country that has a valid tax treaty with the United States. There's a whole list of them on the IRS website. Number two, the dividends are not capital gains. They're not a dividend paid into an employee stock purchase plan. They're not paid by a savings loan. They're not paid by a mutual savings bank. They're not paid by a farmers cooperative or others. Again, a full list is available on the IRS website. And the third thing that an ordinary dividend has to do to become a qualified dividend is it must meet the holding period. Now, the holding period description is very arcane, so if you like to take notes, this might help, or you may have to listen to this part of the podcast more than once. The holding period for the stock is described as follows. 60 days before the X date, that is 59 days before the declaration date for the dividend, begins a 120-day period of time. Since each quarter is about 91 days, this covers a full quarter plus 30 days, about one-third of the year. During this 120-day period, you must hold the stock for more than 60 days. So for more than half of the period, you must hold onto that stock. When you count the number of days, you include the day you sell the stock, but you do not include the day you bought it. Clear as mud, right? Who writes these rules? I'm surprised they don't require that we hop on one leg and sing, "I want to hold your hand," while we're buying the stock and submit a video to prove it. Wait, the IRS just might do that. Never mind. Okay. If preferred stock dividends are to be considered qualified dividends and are paid on a quarterly basis or six-month basis, then the same rule applies to them as for common stock. But if the dividend is for a period over 366 days, more than a year, then the rule is different. Surprise, surprise. In that case, 90 days before the ex-dividend date begins a 181-day period during which you must have held the stock more than 90 days in order for the dividend to be considered a qualified dividend. Fortunately for all of us, you can look up when most companies declare their dividends. And you can usually look back historically and see when those declaration dates are. They try pretty much to do it more or less the same day. So if you're thinking you want to buy a stock and be able to get the dividend and have it be a qualified dividend, you're not sure if you're going to sell the stock, then you might want to look back historically, Value Line, Standard & Poor's. You can even look at the annual report. Most of those sources of information will tell you when the approximate declaration date is for the dividend. Okay, here's an example. You buy 1,000 shares of XYZ Common on July 15th of 2015. The dividend is declared on July 15th, 2015. making the ex date July 16th, 2015. So you bought it on the last day you could buy it to get the dividend for this quarter. The dividend is 10 cents per share for this quarter for a total of $100 for your shares. You sell the 1,000 shares on September 16th, 2015. You have held the stock for 63 days, from July 16th through September 16th. Remember, you count the day that you sell it, not the day that you buy it. And remember, July and August both have 31 days, hence the 63 days. The $100 is considered to be a qualified dividend because you held the stock for 61 days of the 121-day period. The 121-day period began on May 17th, which was 60 days before the ex-dividend date, and it ended on September 14th. If you're a stock trader, paying attention to these rules could make a very big difference in how much money you get to keep and how much you have to pay in taxes. Use your head and don't rush into a transaction without thinking about the tax ramifications first. Think of these arcane rules as a form of CSI for tax numbers, and maybe it will be more fun for you to contemplate as you make investment decisions. Timing, as in most of life, is everything. Okay, three. Capital gains and losses. When you buy common stock, real estate, fixed income investments, preferred stocks, and other investments, you purchase them at one price and then sell them at another price, hopefully getting more than you originally paid for it. To have a true picture of your rate of return on your investment, not only do you have to take into account any commissions you pay on the buy and sell sides, but also any taxes you will have to pay as well. If you have a targeted rate, then consider whether you will include taxes in your calculations. That's up to you to decide. Personally, I think it's very smart to consider taxes because you could think you're making a lot of money, and then after you pay taxes, you can find that you're not. The profit between your sale price and your purchase price is known as a capital gain. If you have a loss between your sale price and your purchase price, that is known as a capital loss. The name comes from the belief that you're increasing your capital, your overall investment resources, when you have a gain. And if you have a decrease in your overall capital, then it is considered a loss. For tax purposes, short-term is defined as 12 months or less. Short-term gains and losses occur when you sell investments you have held for 12 months or less. The tax on short-term gains can range from 0%, depending on your income, to a maximum of 39.6%, depending on your income. Long-term is defined as assets held for more than 12 months. The tax on long-term gains can range from 0% to 15%, or 20%, depending on your income bracket. Or the tax can be 25 to 28%, depending on the type of asset sold. Again, check the IRS website, and it will make this much clearer. Financial services firms help you a lot with this record keeping if you let them. When you purchase securities, they can provide you the purchase date and cost basis, even adjusting it for stock splits. Check their work, of course, since no one is perfect. If you deposit securities or you receive them as an inheritance or gift, do your best to obtain the cost basis and acquisition date and have them added to your record. Each month when you get your statement, it should reflect your cost basis, whether your holding period is long or short-term, and the gain or loss you have in your positions. When you review your portfolio and are making decisions to rebalance or change your focus, consider the tax consequences as well as the fundamentals before you act. Do you have a short-term loss that you can match with a short-term gain? Do you have a long-term loss you can match to a long-term gain? Can you find a loss that you can match to a long-term gain? Look for these things before you make a decision about what you're going to sell. If you have an excess of losses, you're allowed to offset up to $1,500 per person in earned or other income with that loss and carry over the remainder. The goal of investing is to increase your capital, not decrease it. But keep in mind you can use losses effectively to lower your tax bill and enjoy the full increase in capital on other investments. If you find you have capital gains in several securities and no losses with which to offset them, consider giving those shares to your favorite charity in lieu of your annual cash donation. you will be allowed to take the full deduction for the full value of the gift, and the charity will gladly accept the appreciated asset. They're in a different tax bracket and tax situation as you are. So that really works out very nicely if you do make annual gifts to a charity to do so with appreciated assets. Some charities will have to approve your gift depending on what it is, but for the most part, if it's stocks or fixed income securities, they will gladly accept them. Check with the charities of your choice to get the instructions for transferring securities to them and the best way to do so. And do that fairly far in advance. I personally recommend that if you make your gifts at year end, that maybe in October you check with them to see what financial services firm they work with, what the instructions are to make that securities transfer and do that. Give them a little bit of time and, of course, notify them once the transfer has been made so they can be on the lookout for those shares and know that those particular shares are your gift to them. 4, estimated taxes. Complaining about taxes due, usually because of a shortfall in the account where the tax check is drawn from, can be resolved by making estimated payments. Estimated taxes are calculated by taking into account any income or capital gains you may have received during the year. Estimated taxes are paid quarterly on the 15th of the month. Tax payments are due for income tax on 2015 income on April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and January 15th. Let's say you owned a vacation home in the mountains for 10 years with a cost basis of $1,000. You've decided you want to sell it because you don't ski anymore and you don't want to lease it out and be a landlord. You sell it next week for $400,000. The difference is $200,000 in long-term capital gain. Your income qualifies you for 15% tax treatment on your capital gain. You owe $30,000 in taxes on the capital gain from the sale of your vacation home. Your tax advisor will most likely recommend you make an estimated payment on June 15th to cover the taxes on the sale. The amount will depend on what other deductions, if you have any, to offset a portion of the tax. If it is not suggested that you make an estimated payment, then make sure you set this money aside in a government-insured account so you will have the funds when you're expected to pay the taxes on this transaction. When you visit with your tax advisor, ask if you should be making estimated payments. One of the reasons I recommend that you put the money aside and pretend that you don't have it and have it there for taxes is if it turns out that you don't have to make as large a payment as expected once all the math has been done. It's like getting a little bonus. And then you have that money to invest elsewhere, set aside for maybe something special that you would like to do, a special trip, maybe a special item that you've been saving money for, something like that. So it's prudent to put the money aside and pretend you don't have it until the time comes that you need it to pay taxes. 5, retirement plans, tax-deferred investments, and college 529 plans. If you are over 59 and a half, then you are eligible to make withdrawals from most retirement plans. If you funded them with pre-tax dollars, then the withdrawals will be taxable to you and included in the tally of your annual income. If you've invested in tax-deferred annuities and you are over 59 and a half, then you may find that you will pay tax on a portion of the distributions you begin to receive. If you invested after-tax money, say $10,000, then if you begin to receive distributions, a portion of the distribution will represent a return of principal, which is tax-free, and another portion will be considered income subject to taxation. College 529 plans have come under discussion recently because they allow after-tax money to be invested in the plan, and if later, after the plan funds have appreciated in value through growth and are distributed for use to pay tuition, room and board, and books, the distributions for those purposes only are tax-free. Anyone can set up a 529 plan if it is permitted under the laws of the state in which you reside. I have worked with an accountant every year for my entire adult life. Actually, I've only had two accountants, well, actually three accountants that I've worked with, but two accounting firms. In countless ways, it has been helpful and profitable to me to be able to consult with someone who knows the tax law and understands me. I hope you can find someone to help you too. It will allow you to sleep better at night and know you have made the best decisions you can to further your success in your financial life. The only two things that we are required to do in life are to pay taxes and then to die. I hope I was able to help you better understand some of the things you need to know about taxes and investments. Next week, I will cover company financials, and the last week of the month, I'll go over disciplines you can apply when managing your investments. I hope these sessions give you a sense of excitement, pride of ownership, and involvement in our capitalist system, and an interest in your investments that goes beyond the money involved and gives meaning to your financial life. Thank you for joining me today for the Money Smarts for You show. Please email me your questions or thoughts to Barbie@moneysmartsforyou.com, B-A-R-B-I-E at moneysmarts, the number 4, the letter U.com, and we will cover them in future shows. Remember, take care of your money to take care of yourself.
Thank you for joining us today. Find out more at moneysmartsforyou.com. Like us on Facebook, buy the book on Amazon, and remember to subscribe to the show.